Okay, imagine this. You're in a room with someone, and neither of you say a single word, just standing there. How much could you possibly communicate? And maybe more surprising, how much are you already communicating, like right now, without even trying?
It's one of the most fascinating bits about how we interact, isn't it? We focus so much on the words, the actual language.
Yeah, the vocabulary and grammar.
Right. But there's this whole other layer, incredibly rich, happening underneath always.
Absolutely. And that hidden layer, that's exactly what we're diving into today, this, powerful world of nonverbal communication. We've got some great source material here that really untacks it.
Yes, and the aim isn't just to define it, right? It's to really get a feel for what it is, why it matters so much, like in every single conversation you have, how it shifts depending on culture, and maybe most importantly, how you can actually get better at it, both sending and receiving these wordless messages.
It's kind of like getting a shortcut, to being really clued in on how much is actually being communicated when people aren't talking. So let's jump right in. What is nonverbal communication, like at its core?
Well, simply put, it's communication without words.
Good.
It's that whole process, always ongoing, of sending and receiving messages that don't use spoken or written language.
And one of the first things that really jumps out is how revealing it can be. These nonverbal cues, they can often tell us more about someone than the actual words they pick.
Oh, definitely. Think about someone saying, "I'm fine," but their face is totally flat, shoulders slumped.
Right. You don't believe the words.
Exactly. It shows how nonverbal isn't like separate from verbal. They're tangled up
They're
together.
definitely interconnected.
Yeah, they work together, influencing each other constantly.
So the basic difference is verbal uses voice, language, while nonverbal uses body language, expressions, other wordless signals. It's the how you communicate, even when you're silent.
And the impact, it's massive. Get this. Roughly 65% of our daily communication is nonverbal.
65%.
Wow.
That's huge.
Right.
It's not just some minor detail. It's the majority of how we connect, how we build relationships, understand each other.
It totally flips your perspective when you realize most of the information exchange isn't even in the words themselves. And this nonverbal layer, it carries huge cultural meaning too. That's a massive piece of this. It really makes you think about that Peter Drucker quote.
Oh, the one about hearing what isn't said.
Exactly. The most important thing in communication is to hear what isn't being said. It just nails the importance of this hidden layer.
That quote feels spot on here, really underlines that hidden dimension we're talking about.
And its power is just undeniable. People often call it the most powerful form of communication for certain things,
Like what?
like creating the image people have of you,
Ooh.
or expressing those really complex emotions, feelings that words sometimes just fall short on.
Okay, so it's dominant, it's powerful, often more believable. Let's look at the types of nonverbal communication the sources talk about.
Right. We can break it down into two basic types. First, you've got intentional nonverbal communication.
Okay, intentional, so you mean to do it.
Precisely. You're consciously sending a message with a nonverbal signal, like pointing your finger to show direction.
Or giving a deliberate smile.
Yeah, or clapping after a performance. You choose that action to communicate something specific.
Got it. What's the other type?
That's unintentional nonverbal communication. And this is where it gets really interesting, I think.
How so?
Because it happens without you consciously trying. It's how your posture might give away that you're nervous, even if you're trying to hide it.
Ah, like fidgeting or something.
Or maybe a quick facial expression, like a micro expression that flashes your true feeling before you can control it. It's the signals you send without meaning to.
So the stuff that just kind of slips out, the wordless tells. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, how do these messages actually show up? What are the different forms?
There are several key forms we use constantly. Eye contact, for instance, super fundamental.
Right.
In American culture, it often signals respect, interest. It helps establish the kind of relationship you have.
And avoiding it can mean what? Disinterest, shyness.
Yeah, or even dishonesty in some situations. Then there are facial expressions,
Oh,
obviously.
yeah, huge.
Incredibly direct, communicating emotion, happiness, sadness, anger, fear. We process those cues almost instantly.
Totally. What else?
Posture, how you hold yourself, your stance, how you sit, walk, can reveal your mood right now and even hint at your general personality.
Like someone slumped over, looks tired or sad.
Exactly. Standing tall might project confidence. Crossed arms could signal being closed off, defensive maybe.
And walking with your head down, avoiding eye contact. Maybe shyness.
Could be, yeah. Mm. Then there's haptics.
Haptics, okay.
Oh. Communicating through physical contact. A handshake is the classic example, right? For greetings, building trust, introductions,
sure.
Gestures too. Those visible body actions, usually with hands, face, other parts, sending specific messages.
Like waving, nodding, the thumbs
up,
all that stuff.
Exactly. Think how much you gesture just while talking.
Yeah, I probably do it a lot.
And finally, personal space. That invisible bubble we all have.
Your boundary.
Right. You only really notice it when someone gets too close, right? When they intrude. Makes you feel uncomfortable.
Definitely. So it's coming at us from all angles. Then eyes, face, body touch, movement, even distance.
It's totally multi-channeled, all sending messages at the same time.
And this is where it gets really, really complex. And you touched on this earlier. It's absolutely not universal. Culture plays a massive role.
Oh, hugely. How these signals are sent, how they're interpreted, even how much people use certain types, it varies wildly.
Let's hear some examples.
Okay, well, in Japan, bowing is fundamental for greetings, showing respect.
Yeah.
And the angle of the bow actually matters. It signals different levels of deference.
Wow, that's very specific.
Very precise ritual. Then in China, there's often less comfort with touching strangers. Body contact in formal settings might be avoided.
So maybe not the casual back pat you might see elsewhere.
Probably not, depending on the situation. Meanwhile, in Pakistan, nonverbals are used a lot to express happiness, respect, love.
Okay.
Argentina, a handshake and a nod are pretty standard for showing respect when greeting.
And India.
The namaste greeting is very common. Palms together, slight bow, shows respect.
And then you compare that to, say, the USA.
Much more informal, generally. Handshake, smile, direct eye contact, maybe a verbal hello.
It's just amazing how that simple act of greeting someone can look so different wordlessly around the world.
It really highlights that these cues have meaning because they're shared and understood within a group, within a culture.
Right. If that shared understanding isn't there,
the message gets lost, or worse, misinterpreted. Think about the source mentions the chicken dance.
Okay.
It's a form of nonverbal expression, obviously, through movement, but its specific meaning beyond maybe general happiness or silliness wouldn't make sense to someone who's never seen it in its cultural context.
Right. The meaning isn't inherent in flapping your arms like a chicken.
Not really. No, it's the shared cultural joke or activity.
Okay, so we get what it is, the forms it takes, how culture shapes it. Given all this complexity, how do we actually get good at it? How do we become skillful?
Right. That brings us to the idea of nonverbal skillfulness. It's a really crucial part of being a competent communicator overall.
And it sounds like it connects to other abilities, like social or emotional intelligence.
It absolutely does. They support each other. Good nonverbal skills help your social intelligence, you know, navigating situations, understanding people's intentions.
Or getting along with others.
Yeah. And it's tied to emotional intelligence, too. Understanding your own emotions, accurately reading others' emotional signals. Improve one, you tend to improve the others.
So being good at reading the room, nonverbally, makes you better socially and emotionally and vice versa. What are the key parts of this skillfulness?
The sources point to two main components. First, nonverbal sensitivity.
Sensitivity.
That's your ability to accurately decode or read the nonverbal cues others are sending.
Reading their signals correctly.
Exactly. And the second is nonverbal expressivity.
Expressivity.
Which is your ability to effectively encode or send clear, understandable nonverbal messages yourself.
So decoding others and encoding clearly yourself makes total sense.
Yeah.
And mastering these makes you a better communicator overall.
Definitely. Which leads to, okay, how do we actually learn this stuff?
Yeah, is it like learning a language?
It's more, well, the sources describe it as live and learn. A huge chunk of our nonverbal skill comes from experience, direct or indirect.
So not really something you just pick up from a textbook?
Not entirely, no. You develop it by doing, through trial and error, through seeing what works and what doesn't.
Like positive and negative reinforcement.
Exactly. You try a certain look or a gesture, you see how people react, and you adjust based on whether you got the reaction you wanted or not.
Kind of a trial by nonverbal fire. Okay, now when we're sending these messages, is it always conscious? Are we always choosing to send them?
Not always, no. You can send messages spontaneously. Those are the natural, automatic, authentic ones that just happen.
Like blushing.
Blushing when embarrassed, yeah. Or maybe instinctively recoiling from something scary. But you can also send messages deliberately on purpose.
Okay.
Like choosing to speak louder, to seem more authoritative, or whispering to show secrecy, you're consciously using a nonverbal element.
So it could be an involuntary reaction or a deliberate strategic choice.
Mm.
What about when we're on the receiving end, when we're processing others' nonverbal cues? What are we getting?
Well, when you process someone's nonverbal behavior, it's like opening a window into all sorts of things. Their attitudes, maybe their physical state, or they tired, energetic, aspects of their personality. Whether they seem sincere or maybe deceptive, even their needs or intentions.
Wow.
It adds so many layers of context that the words alone might completely miss.
It's like reading between the lines, but the lines are drawn on their face and body.
Exactly. And remember, it's that multi-channeled thing again. You're processing eye contact, posture, facial expression, tone of voice, all at once.
And the consistency between those channels is really important.
Crucially important, yes. Nonverbal cues that are consistent across different channels, say someone smiling while saying they're happy, with open posture.
All the signals match up.
Right. Those messages usually come across as sincere, believable.
But if they're inconsistent, like saying, I'm happy, but frowning.
Exactly. If there's inconsistency either within one channel or across different ones, like that frown while saying I'm happy, or maybe shifting eyes and fidgeting while denying something, it makes the whole message seem unbelievable.
That mismatch sets off an alarm bell.
Our brains are wired to pick up on that discrepancy.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
And this connects to the idea of nonverbal codes, which researchers like Ekman and Friesen explored. They suggested that nonverbal cues talk to us through three different kinds of codes.
Codes?
Yeah.
Like secret languages.
Ah, kind of. Think of them more like different systems of meaning. First, there's the intrinsic code. These are the natural automatic elements. Your basic appearance height, gender that conveys identity, or those automatic displays linked to your emotional or motivational state.
Like tensing up when scared.
Yeah, or spontaneous smiles, frowns, tears, reflexive movements. These are often involuntary, symptomatic, things that just naturally happen because of who you are or how you feel.
Okay, got it. What's next?
The iconic code. Now, these messages are deliberate. They're not purely automatic or symptomatic.
Do you choose these?
Yes. You're posing or sending a signal to create a specific impression, like consciously trying to look friendly or appear confident, even if you're nervous.
Or maybe trying to look truthful when you're not.
Exactly. You're using nonverbal cues to represent or suggest something about yourself intentionally. It can be like a performance, as you said earlier.
Okay. And the third code?
That's the arbitrary code. This one is learned. It's socially constructed, much like language itself.
Ah, okay.
It uses symbols where the meaning is assigned by a culture. Clothes are a perfect example.
Right. Like a uniform meaning police officer or a specific traditional dress signaling cultural background.
Exactly. The meaning isn't inherent in the clothes themselves. It's assigned. And this code is definitely not universal. The symbols, their meanings, they vary hugely between cultures.
And the sources had a great example for this. Hands on hips.
Yes. That's a fantastic illustration. In the Philippines, apparently, standing with your hands on your hips can be a clear, understood signal of anger.
Really? Anger?
That's what the source indicates. But here in the U.S.?
It means something totally different. Maybe authority,
yeah,
impatience, or just standing comfortably.
Exactly. Completely different interpretations for the exact same physical posture.
Wow. That perfectly shows how this arbitrary code depends entirely on shared learned meanings within a specific culture.
Absolutely. For any nonverbal code to work, but especially the arbitrary one, the meaning has to be shared and understood by the people using it in that context.
Which brings us back again to just how deeply culture shapes all of this, even the stuff that feels spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you think about multicultural societies like the US, Canada, the UK. There must be such a mix of nonverbal styles compared to more homogeneous places like Japan or maybe parts of the Middle East.
That's a really interesting point. And researchers actually look at cultural dimensions that influence nonverbal behavior.
Like what kind of dimensions?
Well, like the difference between individualist and collectivist cultures.
Okay.
Individualist cultures like the US or Australia tend to value more personal space, more privacy, maybe more overt, spontaneous emotional expression.
Yeah.
Collectivist cultures often prioritize group harmony, shared space might be smaller, and emotional display might be more controlled to maintain that harmony.
So that personal bubble we talked about could literally be bigger or smaller depending on the culture.
Definitely. Or think about immediate versus non-immediate cultures, sometimes called contact versus non-contact.
How close people stand, how much they touch.
Exactly. Cultures in the Middle East, Latin America, Southern Europe, even the U.S. to some extent tend to be more immediate. Closer distances, more touching in conversation.
Okay.
Non-immediate cultures, like maybe Germany, Britain, Japan, parts of Asia, tend to prefer more distance and less physical contact, especially with strangers.
That would feel really different interaction-wise.
Totally changes the vibe. Power distance is another factor.
How societies handle inequality.
Yes. In high power distance cultures, maybe Latin America, parts of Asia, nonverbal cues often strongly reinforce status differences. Think posture, gestures, who can initiate touch, who has to show more deference.
Mm-hmm.
In low power distance cultures, Denmark, Israel, Austria, maybe nonverbal behavior tends to be more egalitarian, less focused on marking status differences.
Interesting. Any others?
There's also the masculine versus feminine cultural dimension. This can influence how freely different emotions are expressed nonverbally.
How so?
Well, cultures considered more feminine, like Sweden or the Netherlands, might allow or even encourage a wider range of nonverbal emotional expression for everyone, including tenderness or vulnerability.
Okay.
More masculine cultures, like perhaps Japan or Italy, might have more distinct expectations or restrictions on emotional displays, especially in public, maybe discouraging certain expressions for men, for example.
So all these deep cultural patterns shape the wordless messages flying around every single day.
They absolutely do. So bringing it back to being skillful, it really involves developing that expressivity, sending clear signals yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Sensitivity, accurately reading others.
Decoding.
Self-awareness, knowing what you're communicating non-verbally.
Right.
Self-regulation, being able to manage or adapt the signals you send when needed.
Okay.
And finally, just the motivation, the drive to actually connect effectively using all these non-verbal channels.
Right. So pulling this all together, why does understanding all this matter for you listening right now? What's the big takeaway here?
Well, the sources hammer home some really key points. First, nonverbal communication is a primary way we show our feelings and attitudes.
Often more than words.
Often more than words. When someone's body language is screaming one thing, but their words say another, you instinctively react to the nonverbal.
Which leads right into the next point. Nonverbal messages are usually seen as more believable than verbal ones, especially if there's a conflict.
Exactly. We tend to trust the nonverbal cues more. It feels more raw, more authentic somehow.
Gut feeling.
Yeah. And it's absolutely critical in how relationships start, how they develop, and sometimes how they end. Think about a first date or a job interview. The nonverbals are huge.
Definitely.
And finally, it's crucial to remember that nonverbal messages don't just happen in isolation. They're constantly interacting with verbal messages in really complex ways.
How do you mean?
Well, they can substitute for words like waving instead of saying hello. Yeah. They can complement words like nodding while you say yes adds emphasis.
Right.
They can contradict words. The classic example saying I'm fine while frowning
creates doubt.
Exactly. They can repeat words like pointing in a direction right after you've given verbal directions.
Reinforces it.
They regulate the flow of conversation using eye contact, maybe a hand gesture, to signal you want to speak or you're done speaking.
Managing the turn taking.
And they can accent or emphasize parts of your verbal message, like raising your voice or pounding your fist lightly on a table for emphasis.
Wow. So many functions.
It's incredibly complex.
Yeah.
But understanding this powerful, multi-layered, often subconscious language, it just makes you a much more insightful observer of people.
Yeah.
And a much more effective communicator yourself. You start to notice the whole other conversation that's happening around the actual words.
It really does feel like it opens up a whole new dimension of interaction, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of wraps up our deep dive into nonverbal communication based on all this material. It's just clear that a massive amount of meaning, emotion, information is being exchanged without a single word being uttered.
It really is. And given that nonverbal cues can contradict words, and like we said, are often seen as the more believable signal.
Yeah. It leaves you with a pretty significant thought, doesn't it?
What's that?
Well, how much attention are you actually paying to the nonverbal signals for the people you interact with every day? And just as importantly, how much thought are you giving to the wordless messages that you're constantly sending out?
Definitely something to think about.
Something to mull over until next time.